our town.
Hello, neighbors, and welcome back to Nightmare Town. We are Betty Boom.
And I'm Andamonium.
And this week we are covering...
Sinister.
I had a little bit of difficulty on what I wanted to do for this, but after I figured it out, I did some stuff that I'm not really... I tried something new for this episode, so we're going to see how that goes.
We'll see how that plays out. Yeah. I jumped around a lot. I actually had written like an entire thing and then just like deleted it because I was like, eh, I don't want to talk about that. I'm going to change it.
I hate when that happens. But we are actually putting this episode out late because every flower and tree in Tennessee decided to bloom at the same fucking time. And I don't know about Manda, but last week I didn't have a voice.
I had a voice, but it didn't sound great. And you would have been listening to sniffling probably like every 10 seconds.
Oh. Yeah. Yay, sinuses and allergies.
Yay, severe allergies are the best.
See, I have allergies. They're not that bad, but my sinuses are really bad. Mm. So, and it causes the drainage, which I know is gross, but fuck it, everybody has it.
And yeah.
I used to not. Okay, so I still have all of my wisdom teeth because I'm broke and I can't get them taken out.
Understandable.
But used to, my top wisdom teeth were up in my sinus cavity, and now that they're moving down, I have a sinus cavity for it to get filled up and icky. And thanks, Dad, because I have horrible sinuses.
Oh, I'm sorry. I never had allergies, like, as a kid, like, to anything. And then just, like, well, I take that back. I did have one random allergic reaction as a kid to, like, a tree or something. But that was a weird isolated incident where my eyes swelled shut.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was my stepmom and dad were kind of alarmed. I don't know if they remember that, if they're listening, but yeah. One of my eyes just swelled shut. And then, like, as an adult, I, like, ended up just going to the doctor because I, like, kept thinking. I was like, I have strep or I have a sinus infection. Something's wrong. I'm sick all the time. I know I work with kids, but, like, always sick at the time. And they were like, oh, actually, yeah, no, you're just, like, you have bad allergies. Here's, like, six different things we're just going to prescribe to you endlessly and just like just take them all.
just take these, we'll see what happens.
Okay, thanks, great.
Oh,
yeah, that... it's like, when did I get allergic to things?
Yeah, no, I thankfully I'm not that bad. It's just, you know, twice a year I know that I'm going to randomly lose my voice and sound like I'm a 70-year-old chain smoker.
I mean, depending on the story we're telling, that could add some ambiance to the podcast, but if you were reading a character, but...
but I'm not. But anyway, guys, we are going to be jumping right into this because I don't think we have anything to talk about.
No, I don't believe so.
I mean, other than, you know, our birthday's coming up.
That's right. It is.
Yep, it's almost been 3 years of Nightmare Town.
That's just wild. I can't believe that. But it's just been ongoing for 3 years.
I know, right? But anyway, we're going to jump into the actual, like, meat of the podcast. And Manda, it's your turn to go first.
All right. Well, I'll just jump in then. As I mentioned before, I kind of went on a ride with this episode. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to talk about. Scraps and stuff. But then, like, the other morning, Mama Monium just sends out a random group text to the fam, and her text, it was to me and my brother and my sister, it just said, simply, hey, does this weird voicemail sound like it's saying, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, over and over in a really raspy, whispery, scary voice?
What?
Yeah, so that audio clip that I sent you, I'm gonna pull it up.
we
can have a listen. It's a little creepy.
fuck.
So, I mean, like, that's kind of a little sinister. Just a little weird. Alien, garbled, static, scary voices.
Saying, I'm so sorry, or is it saying, I'm so-so? I'm so-so.
Yeah, it's one of those, what do you think it says kind of thing, like, implied. But yeah, to us, through the power of suggestion of Mamamonium, all I can hear is, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, over and over. But yeah, so that was a little creepy on like a Monday morning. But
can I just say, I love your family.
I do too. We're always just finding interesting things to converse about. So basically, after listening to that a couple times and texting some jokes about how that voice kind of sounded like the zombies from the Half-Life 2 game, which, if you're not familiar with that game, they kind of make a scary moaning sound, but if you play the sound backwards, it's actually a voice recording of someone screaming, oh god, and help me. Like, it's pretty terrifying.
The fuck?
Yeah, okay, wasn't sure if I'd mentioned that or not, if you knew that. Yeah, so in that game in particular, if you reverse the audio of the like zombies with the like head crabs on them, just kind of like regular people, yeah, it's actually the sound that they make is just a reversed clip of somebody like screaming like, oh god, help me. Like, it's kind of deep, yo, because it's like this person's still in there somewhere underneath the head crab.
If you get the head crab off, do they survive or revert? Or
I think you just kill them. You just have to put them out of their misery.
Okay.
Yeah, a little creepy tidbit, but yeah. So, basically, that led me into looking up like just creepy sounding voicemails. So I have compiled a few stories below from the far reaches of the internet. And we're going to read them because they're creepy. This first one is from a subreddit called r/creepyreads on Reddit. And this user writes that one day they just heard a voicemail on their phone that just repeatedly said, I'm the net cutter, I'm 2 blocks away. I'm the net cutter, and I'm 2 blocks away. I'm the net cutter, and I'm in your living room. Which is very terrifying when your parents have just left town for the weekend and you're like a teenager and it's like the first time you're staying home, according to this user. So like, that's a little creepy. Probably a prank call, but
yeah,
you know.
That's also why you get your kids a master sword.
Exactly. So this next one is a little lengthy, but it's just piqued my interest. This one is on r/unresolved mysteries. And the title of it was actually, what is this sinister sounding recording on my mom's answering machine? And the person writes, a couple of years ago, my mother called me from a neighbor's house in a hysterical state because someone had taken over her home phone. She's very independent, but elderly. She has some failing vision and lives alone in Greeley, Colorado. Her neighbor checked out the phone and it seemed okay, so my mom eventually calmed down and went home. Then a few days later, it happened again. My mom was inconsolable and refused to go back into her house. Her neighbor told me she couldn't stop shaking. I urgently took time off work and traveled to Colorado the next day to help her. I tested her phone and I couldn't find anything wrong, but I said I'd stay with her for the next week to make sure that she was okay. I thought she was going a little mad, maybe, and was desperately trying to work out how I could move to Colorado permanently to live closer to her. I was horrified when I discovered what was really going on. When she had lifted the receiver, rather than the dial tone, she heard a really creepy message. I'm not surprised it terrified her. It freaked me out, too. Over the next few days, I figured out that the message only came... Sorry, there's a backpack over here, and it just decided... to fall over for no reason, even though it's been sitting totally stationary there for like 2 months.
Oh God.
So Bigfoot. Like, that's neat. It probably was. He's around here somewhere.
Oh, that's creepy. I don't like it.
So anyway, Poltergeist in my room, you get to hear this story too. So what up? Over the next few days, I figured out that the message only came between 7 p.m. to 7:15 p.m. Any other time of day, there was a normal dial tone and the phone worked normally. The phone didn't ring at 7 p.m. or anything. It was just that if you lifted the receiver to make a call between the hours of 7 to 7:15 p.m., you'd get the sinister message rather than the dial tone. If it was before 7:15 p.m. and you hung up the phone and then lifted the receiver again, the message would play again from the start. Mm. If you hung up and then immediately, as in within a fraction of a second, lifted the receiver again, the line would appear to be dead until 7:15. My mom's phone has a connector for a headset, so I managed to record the message on my laptop. The day after I recorded the message, the phone was dead for most of the day. I called the phone company, but they said they couldn't find a fault and wouldn't do anything. In the evening, I tried to take another recording to see whether the message had changed, but it was gone and there was just a normal dial tone now. The message has never come back, but my mom is still frightened about using her phone. I don't blame her. Ever since, I've tried to discreetly figure out what it was all about and what it's got to do with my mom, but I got nowhere, so I've decided to post my recording on the internet to see if anyone can help. I'm not sure what the male voice says at the start of the message, but I think he says NORAD, the Nuclear Defense Agency. So I'm posting this anonymously. I don't want any trouble. If I'm posting something secret, I'm not supposed to have heard. I've cut short the tone at the end. It was ear-splitting and would go on until you replaced the receiver. I just want to be clear that this isn't a joke, troll, or whatever, as has been pointed out. It might be a prank someone pulled on my mom, but it would be insanely elaborate if it is. I'd really like to know if anyone has any info, perhaps the inside info, about what this message might be. So there's actually a link to the audio, but they also have a transcript here, which I'm just going to read. But as always, we always provide our links. So if you'd like to go check it out, you're welcome to do that.
Oh, I'm going to go listen.
Yeah. So the transcript reads, there's a female voice that just says, "Connecting you, please hold the line." Then several beeps, then a male voice, "NORAD, EWS, station ZF77, ZF77. Status alert, CON 4. Status alert, CON 4. Security tracing in process. Attention, attention, attention." And then another series of beeps. WW09 ready. NP44 danger. HP87 ready. HQ39 ready. PK58 ready. FC23 ready. NN18 trigger. VY92 ready. LC56 secure. Another beep. Attention, attention, attention. Another beep, some distorted noise, and then a continuous tone until the receiver is replaced. And they described the tone as just like you said, ear-splittingly loud. And I did listen to the audio, and like he wasn't joking. The tone at the end isn't just a normal like beeping dial tone. Like it's just loud and gets louder and like ear-piercing. It's pretty creepy if you guys want to go give it a listen.
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
You remember our creepy broadcast episode?
Yeah.
With the Russians?
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of too. And a lot of people were speculating that maybe it was just like some cross like signal from like some sort of, you know, from NORAD. And it was just picking up the frequency on her receiver. But like just how like the specific time that it was doing it and only when you lifted the receiver.
Was it only her receiver? Like, is she talking to her neighbors? And also, who still has a house phone?
Mama Monium still has a house phone.
Of course she does. So does Mama Boom. So
it's one of those, like, literally the only people that ever call it are our grandparents and robocalls. But we, like, it's set over there, like, if it's a robocall, like, the phone will just ring once and then stop. Like, it just doesn't keep ringing because it's like, see? Oh, don't answer this.
Yeah, my mom still has a house phone. But I mean, like, that's my mom. I just assume she's odd.
I think ours is, like, my parents is more of just we've literally had this phone number and this house phone for so long, it would just be weird to not have it at this point, so.
Oh, yeah. No, I have that number memorized, and it's one of those, they've had it since I was a wee lass, and, yeah, no, it's one of those numbers that if anyone's like, what's your house number? I'm like, I don't live there anymore.
Yeah. I kind of want to call their house phone just to do it, but I feel like it would, like, alarm them if they saw the receiver that I was calling them on the house phone, cuz one, I don't really do phone calls. And two, we're neighbors.
Yeah.
And three, I have a cell phone. Like, and they both have cell phones. Like, why wouldn't I just call their cells? But
I mean, my mom never carries her cell phone on her. So if I want to talk to her, which, like, I talked to her today, so I called the house phone. But I have the house phone memorized. I have the shop memorized. And I have my eldest brother's phone number memorized because it used to be my dad's.
Yeah, I still have a lot of my family members, like, phone numbers memorized from when I was little, and even, like, house phone numbers they don't have anymore, but I can't remember other important things.
Yeah.
That would serve me today, but whatever.
That's, like, one of my best friends. Her number was almost exact. There was one digit that was different. And then otherwise we had the exact same phone number. So. That's, but I'm cool. Not going to give that out because I don't want people calling my mama.
Exactly. Anywho, after that tidbit, I do have one more smaller story. And this is from a website called Weekend Weird, which it kind of reminds me of, like, an old, like, early 2000s, like, blog almost. But it's, like, just full of, like, just weird stories and stuff people submit. But it said that this one guy got a phone call at 4:50 in the morning. He let it go to voicemail, like, you know, everyone does at 4:50 in the morning. he said later when he listened back to the voicemail that a, like, really creepy cacophony of static garbled voices and other strange sounds were playing. Ooh. You know, kind of like Mama Bonium's call there. Yeah. So, naturally, he calls the number back, only to find out that it's an out-of-service number, of course. Mm-hmm. After he did some internet searching, though, he discovered that the number did actually used to belong to a funeral home out of Hawaii. So that's a little weird.
Okay.
Also, as a completely unrelated side note, but still kind of, like, this is just sinister, like, what I stumbled on Facebook the other day. But if you want to read about some, like, just really weird stuff among, like, just mixed in with random boring stuff, such as, like, everything from, like, look at this tiny little coin I found, it's so cute, to I found this hidden room in my new house's basement that has a chain and a stain on the floor from an old mattress. Is the Facebook group Things Found in Walls and Other Hidden Things? Do you know, are you, oh my God, why have I not invited you to this group, Betty? So, like, there's a current one I stumbled on that actually was just, like, pictures and everything of someone who was, like, hiking in the woods, and they came across all these, like, rocks, and several of the rocks were just planted upright in the ground, and there was an old photo album filled with scandalous images of women in, like, various states of undress. And the only, like, image that the poster, like, showed, because they were like, this is literally the only one that was, like, suitable for showing. And even it's, like, kind of risky and also creepy because the woman looks like she could be knocked out in the image or, like, something. And then there's some debate on if the image that they showed, if the woman has, like, bruising on her. Or if it's like mottled skin, like she might be dead, or if it's just like dirt and mold from like on the photo album. Yeah, so OP contacted their police, of course, and they like led the police, you know, there to check it out, and they like fenced off the area. And at first they were like, ah, it's probably just some teenagers. And it's like, okay, but it's not the 80s and we don't have like woods porn as often anymore. Like
Wait, did they even have woods porn in the 80s?
it would be like teenagers that would get like Playboys and stuff and like go to the like woods and like look at it together because like they can't have that in their house. They'll get caught. So
Yeah.
and they would just like ditch the magazines and stuff in the woods so they
Yeah,
wouldn't
but
like
this
get in
is a
trouble.
photo
But yeah,
album.
this
This
was a
isn't a
photo album,
magazine.
and the person said that it had like 150 something images. But like that group in particular is just like so unreal because you'll see these posts, you'll save the post to come back for updates. Sometimes you'll get updates, and other times the post is just deleted. And then you're like, did they have to delete it because of law enforcement? Because there's an open case on it, or what? Like,
Did they find a body?
yeah, so. But again, like there's also completely random wholesome things. Like somebody had like a big nickel and a little bitty nickel and was like, look at this I found in this like attic or something. And it's like, oh, that's cool. It looks like one of those magic trick coins where you can shrink the coin real little. And then like you scroll down and see like like a
Wood
basement
porn.
with chains and like, yeah, like terrifying photo albums. So like it's a good mix of stuff. It's a very interesting group. I'll send you an invite to it, but
Yes.
yeah, so there's that's completely unrelated, but just interesting, and I needed to share because I saw that story and I was just like, oh, okay, here we go, true crime Facebook. All right.
Yeah,
Like,
how am I not a member of this group
I
already?
really thought I'd sent you an invite, but I don't remember to do a lot of things. But
I
yeah,
might
so
have. I don't really get, unless it's for the podcast, I don't actually get on social media that much.
that is true, yeah. But yeah, I'll send it because it just definitely has some like just interesting things that like some of them actually turn into real legal cases. Like
That's crazy. So I'll
that's
send it
weird.
to
Let's
you.
go investigate that.
Do, do,
And
do.
then just other neat things of people finding like old vintage artifacts and stuff like that, or like old rings or just neat history stuff. But anyway, that does it for me.
Alrighty.
Kind of a jumble of things, but that's just where my brain was at this episode.
Okay, well then, guys, we're gonna take a quick break for processing it, purposes, and we'll be right back with my differentness, and we'll see how that goes.
Right, changing it up this time.
Woo!
We're both getting wild.
Okay, guys, we are back, and it is my turn. So I'm just gonna jump right into this, and if it's not good, I'm sorry. I tried something new. I did. Like I said, I did some stuff I don't like. So, but I did it for you guys.
We like it when we try new things.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Well, I'm excited for it.
Okay. I'm gonna try something different for my part of the episode. I've been listening to a lot of Sheer Crime, which, if you don't know, it is a fantastic podcast. It's a true crime podcast where they watch a true crime documentary and then give a play-by-play breakdown on it. But instead of doing a true crime documentary, I chose to watch a horror movie.
Ooh.
I don't watch horror movies. I don't like them.
Me neither.
Well, like, I said that to my kitchen manager, and they were like, "Wait, what?" And I was like, "Yeah, I know. I don't like horror movies." And
I
then,
get I've
yeah.
gotten that before too, 'cause I'll play like try to play like scary games. Like I love Silent Hill and like Resident Evil like so much, but I cannot play them for long and I cannot play them alone. I get too scared.
Well,
But here I am doing like a spooky
yeah,
podcast.
I was talking to Kimmy and I brought it up that I don't like horror movies, and she was like, but your podcast. And I'm like, okay, so I can sit there and I can listen to things about scary things and I can read about scary things all day long. Like, that does not bother me, but it is watching something gets to me. And I think it's because, you know, if I'm reading or I'm listening, my imagination's in control and I can kind of buffer that.
Yeah.
But if I'm watching someone else's interpretation of something, I can't control that. And then out of nowhere, there's something fucking jumping at me.
Ugh, jump scares. I hate them.
So, and it's one of those, so I watched a scary movie and now I'm going to have to watch 12 hours of Disney to get this off of my soul.
Yeah.
And there are going to be some movie spoilers in this part of the episode, but the movie came out in 2012, making it 9 years old, so if you haven't seen it yet, that's on you. Or you could just skip my part of the episode. That's okay. So, Sinister is a 2012 supernatural horror film directed and co-written by Scott Derrickson, starring Ethan Hawke, Juliet Rylance, James Ranson, Fred Thompson, and Vincent D'Onofrio. So, the basic story plot is true crime writer Ellison Oswalt, played by Ethan Hawke, discovers a bunch of Super 8 home movies depicting grisly murders in the attic of his new house and puts his family in danger from a demon. Have you seen it? Have you seen Sinister?
Okay, so I have not seen it, but I'm curious about seeing it or like wanting to know what it's about, because when I was trying to find a subject initially, you know how I search for things, it is I'll just Google sinister creepy stories, sinister paranormal, sinister scary, yep, sinister true crime, to try to like get inspired to find a subject to talk about, and all I was seeing was Sinister the movie, and I was like, but
yeah, no, it's one of those, I didn't even Google anything else. I was like, that was a movie. I'm gonna do this. That's, so
I'm excited to hear about it, because okay, my interest has been piqued after all of my trying to research things with the keyword sinister.
Okay, well, like I said, I am going to be doing a breakdown play-by-play, and I'm sorry if it doesn't work, and if it doesn't, you guys should email me and tell me that it doesn't, so that way I don't do it again. So, this movie is dark, and I'm not just talking about the themes. There is hardly any light in the whole thing, which I guess adds to the suspense. But, yeah, it actually, throughout this, I noticed that I wrote, why didn't they turn on a fucking light, like, 20 times? But the beginning of the movie is not a typical opening shot, even for a horror film. What we would usually see is a snippet of like a happy life that eventually falls to shit throughout the course of the movie. But the first thing that Sinister showcase is what looks to be a family of four with bags over their heads, nooses around their necks, and a saw finishing cutting the branch their ropes are tied to before they are hung and die.
So they just jumped into it.
Yeah, they just went right in, and it's like slow-mo kind of. And it was really, like, I'm a film major. I don't know if I've told you guys this. So, like, looking at this from, like, a film perspective was actually pretty cool. And then, like, watching it as just a viewer was also interesting. Because, like I said, I don't like horror movies. So, like, halfway through, whenever things really start, like, ramping up, I was just like, oh, hey, editing-wise, this is where I would put something. And then a thing would happen. I'm like, ha, I've broken the system.
I feel that. I was originally going to go to college to major in, like, film, film too, and media, but did not do that, but still have an interest in it. That's awesome, though.
So then we see the Oswald family moving into their new house. Then the local sheriff stops by to tell Ellison that he isn't too happy that the crime writer is choosing their town to write his new book in, and finds that him moving the Oswald family into the very house where the murders occurred in the opening shot was in extremely bad taste. Now, during their back and forth, they mentioned that the family that was murdered had another child that wasn't found with the victims, and the missing child, and she's presumed dead. Ellison then has a conversation with his wife where she asked him directly if they had moved into a house two doors down from the murder scene, and technically he didn't lie. He then He then goes over to look out their kitchen window at the very tree the family had been hung from, and like the branch is still down. Like,
oh,
they didn't clean anything up. Things start ramping up pretty quickly from there. Ellison goes up to the attic, which is his first mistake because nothing good ever comes from going into an attic, to drop some boxes off. He seems to be having trouble with the door, but after he finally gets it open, he's met with a lone box with home movies written on it sitting in the middle of the space. Once he approaches, he gets another surprise when a random black scorpion pops up and scurries towards him. And then, smart thinking on his part, he drops the box he was carrying, squashing the creepy crawler before opening the home movies box, where he finds an old projector and 5 reels of home movies, all with innocent titles written on them like Family Hanging Out 11 and Barbecue 79. And he immediately takes them to his office. Which, like, if I found a projector, I probably would too, honestly.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh shit, look at this.
Time capsule.
Hmm. Then it's family dinner time with the whole Oswald family, and everything seems normal at first, but then their 12-year-old son, Trevor, asks his father to tell him about the murder that he's going to be focusing his new book on, and even ask him to show him where it happened.
Oh.
Which, like, my 10-year-old asked me about some spooky things all the time, but if he were to ask me about murder and, like, a specific murder, I would shut that down real fast.
Yeah.
Much like how Trevor's mother, Tracy, did, reminding him that his 6-year-old sister, Ashley, was at the table. Then Ellison reminds the kids of the first rule, never go into Dad's office. Then Tracy fires back at Ellison, what's the rule? And he looks kind of just like, always lock Dad's office.
Like, okay.
And it's like, yeah, no, they shouldn't have the option to go in there, no shit. But later that night, Ellison and Tracy are having a little heart-to-heart about how his last successful book was 10 years ago and she can't keep jumping from murder town to murder town. Ellison gets to work on his book in his office, which to me sounds exhausting because, like, they just moved into a new house. They haven't even started unboxing and dude bro is jumping right into a new project.
Yeah.
Dude, take a day. But he doesn't. He starts hanging crime scene photos and I don't know where he got those. And for some reason, he has a photo of the empty attic. He takes a couple of sticky notes, and on one, he draws a box and sticks it to the middle of the photo. Then on the side, he writes one that says, box of films, how did it get there? Which prompts him to set up the projector and watch the films, which was his second mistake. So he chooses to watch Family Hanging Out 11 first. And this is where we would cue creepy music.
Yeah.
And in the movie they do. But it starts out with candid shots of a family milling around their yard. Father and son throwing a ball, mother working in the flower bed, little girls playing. One of them is swinging on a tire swing. The family has a picnic, but it seems disjointed, like the person filming kept turning the camera on and off to catch little snippets of their daily life. It's cute. Then we see the same shot from the opening scene, and we, as the audience, watch Ellison watch the murders happen. Then he breaks out the whiskey before watching it again and jotting down notes. Who made the film? Crime scene. Where's Stephanie? He downs the whiskey, then goes outside to look at the murder tree. Upon re-entering the house, he hears a door creak, and instead of flipping on every light in the fucking house and getting his master sword like I would do, he starts walking around looking for what made the noise, eventually finding his daughter in the laundry room, where she, looking sleepy and adorable, says she can't find the bathroom. He helps her on her way, and after retucking her into bed, they have this really cute father-daughter moment where they talk about Ashley's paintings. And they allow her to paint on the walls in her bedroom, and I love that idea. It's a rather sweet moment between the two. Before Ellison leaves the room, she says, Daddy, are you going to write a really good book this time so we can go home? And he says he's going to write the best book anyone has ever read. Then it's back to the office with more fucked up home movies. This one being Barbecue 79. Again, we see a candid video of a family, mom, dad, and 2 boys, this time, out fishing, then loading their car up, and there are a lot of shots of the car. Then it changes again, and now we get a close-up of the car with chains around it preventing the doors from being opened. The cameraman slowly moves around the vehicle, and upon looking in the windows, three of the four members of the family can be seen, bound, gagged, and with gas cans laying around them. There is some kind of symbol on the hood of the car, and a torch is thrown at the car before we are taken out of the first-person point of view and watch the car go up in flames in the reflection of Ellison's glasses, which I think is a great shot, and kudos to the director for that idea, because it gave me chills, and not like from creepy point of view chills, but like visually.
Just like, man, that's a beautiful shot.
It really was. And then more whiskey is downed before Ellison does the first smart thing he's done and picks up his phone to call the cops. But then he hangs it up after looking at copies of his old book, which is his third mistake. He should have just fucking told the cops. But then there wouldn't be a movie, so.
Yeah, that's true.
So he starts going back through his crime scene photos until he finds the one of the attic before saying, "You came back and left the box. Why?" We then get a look at the last three home movies titled Lawn Work 86, Sleepy Time 98, and Pool Party 66. Ellison chooses Pool Party 66 next. He loads up the projector, and just as he is flipping it on, he hears a noise again. Thinking it is his daughter, he goes to put the child to bed again. Once again, walking through the dark fucking house without flipping a light on, he opens her door to find the girl sleeping soundly. He closes the door behind her, and there is a creak and a rattling coming from the attic area and around the house. There's a great shot of him walking down a dark hallway because he didn't turn on the fucking light.
Who just, like, walks around their house, like, with just in pitch black, like, when you have light switches in your house?
Exactly. I mean, they just moved in, but I saw lights on earlier, so just saying. They paid their bill.
Yeah.
So he's walking towards the kitchen where a medium-sized cardboard box is sitting, and suddenly the box shifts before opening, and his son stretches out of it backwards, screaming like he's been possessed. Like the child sounded like a demon. And after being momentarily startled, Ellison grabs his son and yells at him to wake up. Apparently Trevor is plagued with night terrors.
Oh, and they just great. Slip
that right on in there. Moving on to the next morning, the Oswalds are sitting around the table eating breakfast before the kids head off to school. Then it's back to the murder videos. Again, candid video of a family, parents, daughters, son, all playing in a pool before eating poolside during the day. Then after night falls, things turn ominous. For a moment, the camera focuses on a glass Kool-Aid pitcher that seems to have some sort of bright green stuff in it before it shows us a line of pool chairs facing away from the water with bodies duct taped to them and ropes attached to the back. There are four of them. The camera works its way down the line before we see one of the ropes get pulled tight and the chair it is attached to is pulled into the water. Systematically, all of the chairs are dragged into the depths. We then catch sight of some sort of figure in the water with them. The camera focuses on the figure as it turns around and looks straight into it. Dude bro is spooky looking, with like a beige face and like high arched dark eyes and a pointy fucking nose. Like, it kind of reminds me of like clown makeup, but not. Yeah.
I'm just painting a picture in my head because I'm a very visual
person
when I'm hearing stories, and I'm a little creeped out.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
So Ellison then pauses the film to get a better look at our creeper, but of course you can't keep a bright light on Kodachrome, which is what like old movies were printed on, was Kodachrome, for any length of time before it catches on fire. He then Googles how to fix the film and gives it a go, but it's ruined. At this time, he also sets up a handycam so he can record the movies as he's watching them, then upload the video onto his computer to enhance or pause what he's seeing, which I thought was like a super smart move.
Yeah.
And he uses this trick to capture a small frame of the creeper. Like, you can't see it really well, like you did earlier in the actual film.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it's because I was ruined. But Ellison is then interrupted from his investigation by his family returning home. Tracy is getting on to Trevor, who had heard about the murders from a classmate and decided to draw the family hanging from a tree in permanent marker on the whiteboard at school.
Oh.
Because preteens, you know?
Yeah.
After Trevor is sent to his room, Tracy takes the rest of her frustration out on Ellison, which I feel is totally justified because apparently he didn't tell her the details of the murder he was covering, and now she's hearing it from her 12-year-old. Ellison asks her if Trevor had told her anything else about it, because he still hasn't told, he still wasn't telling Tracy about them living in a murder house. He missed a golden opportunity to fess up.
Yeah.
Back to the office where Ellison is typing away at his laptop when Tracy comes over to the open door to tell him that she's putting the kids to bed and to keep his office door closed. Because, you know, he has a murder board set up and a bunch of other things that kids shouldn't see, and I'm 100% on Tracy's side here.
Yeah.
Oh, look, more whiskey. Before we see the beginning of another home movie, Sleepy Time 98 this time. The opening shot is three cups with that glowing green liquid again before the cameraman makes their way through the dark house. There isn't the normal candid video of the family living their happy life here. Oh no. They get right down to business. The cameraman takes them on a tour of the house, making their way up the stairs using only the light of the camera, so everything is super focused in a little beam of light. They go upstairs, and while they are making their way down a small hallway, a symbol can be seen painted on the wall. We are now in the bedroom, where we can see a small chihuahua barking at the camera before they pan up to a man who looks like he's been drugged because he is duct-taped and gagged and still sleeping. The cameraman shows a large kitchen knife similar to my Stabby McStabstab at work before slitting the man's throat. They then move on to the woman laying next to him. With each kill, we are taken out of the first-person point of view again and watch it happening through the reflection of Ellison's glasses. Then the cameraman goes to a small boy's room, and instead of having us watch it again, Ellison turns away and the focus is on him while the background's blurry. And for this, I was thankful. He then drinks directly from his whiskey bottle. Twice. Plugging his camera into his laptop, he is able to go through the film frame by frame, which is where we get a good look at the symbol on the wall. Ellison prints it off before returning to the film. Just for a moment, something catches his eye and he pauses the frame and fiddles with the contrast before seeing a plaque that says St. Louis on it. Now he has the year and city that the murder happened. Another Google search and boom, news report that tells him there is another missing child. A random creak from overhead distracts Ellison for a bit before he goes back to reading about this new case he's found, before all the lights go out. Then there is another loud creak from above. Ellison does the first logical thing I've seen him do by turning the flashlight on his phone before doing mistake number four and going to check it out. Because guess where he ends up?
The attic?
The attic!
Not going to, like, his kid's room or, like, to see his wife in the blackout when he's hearing creaks upstairs.
Ellison first checks on the kids and his wife before a huge noise from the attic startles him. He grabs a kitchen knife before going up to the one place in your house that is most definitely to have a demon.
Yeah.
At first, he doesn't see anything, so he goes deeper into the space, only for the door to close behind him, which kind of reminded me of your red tape story.
That's pretty reminiscent.
Uh-huh. And then after looking through some of the boxes to make sure his son wasn't in them again, Ellison is startled by the lid of the home movies box moving on its own. He grabs a fire poker that was stored up there for some reason, which is another good idea because it gives him more like reach than a kitchen knife. It's no master sword, but still.
It'll do.
Yeah. He flips the lid and finds a snake slithering away from him. First a scorpion, and now a snake. It's time to call an exterminator.
Where do they live again?
Well, he was wearing a shirt at the very beginning of the movie. I don't remember what it was called, but it's a college that's based out of Vermont. But I know that they had moved to that house, so I don't really know. So, like I said, his thing said for, like, the shirt was from Vermont, but I don't actually know where they were living. Like, the sheriff had a southern accent, but nobody else did. So,
the sheriffs always have southern accents in these movies.
Yeah, but his wasn't, like, the dumbed-down southern accent. It was just, like, a natural southern accent. And I was like, thank you.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. Represent. But once the snake is gone, Ellison catches a glimpse of something drawn on the inside of the lid. Five little doodles depicting the murders of the home movies. Each one with the bodies labeled with things like mom, dad, and siblings' names. And in each, there was an extra stick figure labeled Mr. Boogie.
Oh.
Ellison records the pictures on his phone before hearing another noise. It spooks him, cause no fuck. And he goes to investigate or leave, but either way, he's making his way towards the trapdoor when, bam! He falls through the floor.
That made me jump a little bit. I'm sitting here fidgeting with my, like, little toy Halloween skeleton, like, stretchy skeleton, and I just, like...
So he catches himself for a moment before falling to the floor below. Now, we're in the kitchen with the lights on, where we see Ellison being patched up by an EMT while the local deputy waits to question the new homeowner about what happened. Ellison declines going to the hospital. Then he and the deputy go check out the hole in his ceiling. I very much enjoy the deputy, and I think he's my favorite character in the entire thing. He's just kind of awkward, but awesome. I'm like, we'd be friends. So he questions Ellison why he went into the attic after the power went out, and after Ellison said because he heard noise. But then deputy pointed out that the ladder wasn't down, so nobody could have gotten up there because there's no way to close it from the inside of the attic, so it was probably squirrels. The deputy then asked for an autographed copy of Ellison's book, Kentucky Blood. Ellison says sure, and then leads him into his office, then gets kind of uppity when deputy gets excited about his murder board and then asked him to leave. Deputy then offers to help Ellison in his investigation, and Ellison jumps at the opportunity and gives Deputy a list of things to do. After Deputy leaves, like, and I'm just saying Deputy because he didn't actually have a name. His name was Deputy.
Ah.
So, and, like, Ellison called him Deputy so-and-so. But after Deputy leaves, Ellison and Tracy make up from their fight earlier. The next morning, Ellison uploads his video from the home movie lid, and while he's looking at it, he brings up each home video and happens to see Mr. Boogie in each one now that he knows what he's looking for. And he starts enlarging and enhancing the videos before screenshotting and printing pictures of Mr. Boogie before adding them to his murder board. Tracy and Ashley are in the kitchen while Tracy is making Ellison coffee. Dude seems to run solely off of whiskey and coffee alone. Ashley asks,
Yeah,
no, it's just coffee and whiskey, and I've seen him eat, like, twice, maybe. But Ashley asks if she can take it to him, and after it's made, she goes and knocks on his office door. Ellison accepts it before getting a call from Deputy, and he had found the family from the Barbecue 79 video. They had been burned alive in their garage, and their 9-year-old son was missing. So that's 3 kids that are missing.
Hmm.
He then gives him the address for 2 of the murdered families, and Ellison then makes the connection that the family that was murdered in his house happened to live in the house of the other murder family before they had moved there. Does that make sense? Did that sentence make sense?
Okay, say that one more time.
Okay, so the family that had moved into his house.
Yeah.
Had lived in the house that the barbecue family had lived in
prior. Okay.
And so after they moved into his house, they were murdered.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
And while all of this is going on, the still of Mr. Boogie is pulled up on Ellison's computer with his face looking away from Ellison. But when Ellison made the connection, Mr. Boogie moves to look at him for a moment before going back to his original position.
Oh, no. Nope.
Which, like, fuck me, no thank you.
No.
Yeah. I did not like that. I was like, nope, fuck that. Fuck that. Right on out of here. Ellison then goes back to the attic video And apparently he had still been recording when he fell through the floor. And for one frame, you can see tiny ghost hands pushing him down. He slams his laptop closed and suddenly it's nighttime and Ellison is sleeping in bed with Tracy when the door in the hallway creaks open. Ellison awakens to the sound of the projector playing in the office and again goes to investigate without turning on a fucking light. He calls to Ashley and then Trevor before getting to the office where Family Hanging Out is playing. He flips the projector off and decides to find the still of Mr. Boogie standing in the bushes behind the Hung family. He goes to the window and lines the picture up with his backyard, mistake number 5. And when he lowers it, guess who's standing there but Spooky McSpookface himself. But only for like a brief moment, but he was there. And I was like, fuck that. No, thank you. Mm-mm.
Was there like a crescendo of music going on?
Oh, of course. It's like
when that happened. Okay, maybe I shouldn't watch this movie. Yeah. I think your description's painting enough of a picture for me.
So Ellison, armed with a wooden bat and a flashlight, goes outside like an idiot to snoop around the bushes. While moving the beam of light around, he hears shaky breathing and whips around to see an eye looking back at him. It turns out it was Trevor just hanging out in the bushes, having another night terror.
Oh my gosh!
He puts Trevor back in bed and then goes outside to get his bat because he couldn't just leave the fucking thing until morning. And almost gets attacked by a huge black dog. While Ellison is focused on the dog and making his way towards his bat, we get a glimpse of what's behind him. 5 silhouetted children. Then in a blink of an eye, they're gone. Ellison makes his way inside where Tracy is waiting for him to discuss what happened to Trevor. Tracy asks Ellison to drop the book and for them to just move to go back home. They argue, and eventually they both just let it go, and he tells her that there's nothing is wrong. The next morning, Deputy shows up with a file of pertinent information about one of the barbecue murders, then asks if he can come in. He confronts Ellison about not being some starstruck local moron and lists his credentials. He has a degree in criminology and has taken his fair of forensic science courses, and he also knows when he sees a series of connected murders, thank you very much. And if Ellison wanted his help, he was going to have to let him in the loop just a little bit. Ellison asks if he really wants to help, and Deputy responds, "This is my home, Mr. Oswald. What happened here happened to all of us." Ellison then opens up and lets Deputy into the loop, everything. From the connected murders, Mr. Boogie, and the symbol that he keeps seeing, Deputy asks if he thinks it's a serial murderer, but Ellison states that it was more of a ritual killing and how they were spread out not only by distance but time, and that the first case that he could find was in the 60s. The two then speculated about the age of the perpetrator and that he would have to be in his 60s or 70s. They also mentioned that it seemed that he sometimes drugged the victims with an unknown drug, therefore removing his need to overpower them. Then they talk about the methods of killing, hanging, fire, drowning, the slitting of throats, and how in each instance the killer murdered the entire family except one, the missing child. Deputies suggest that the murders had something to do with the occult, and that Ellison should speak to one of the professors, Professor Jonas, who is an occult crime expert at the college who was brought in on some of their weirder stuff. Ooh, wow, weirder. That got southern. Weirder. Nighttime rolls in again, and with coffee in hand, Ellison goes to watch the last, and may I say worst, home movie, Lawn Work 86. This one shows a family of 4 sitting in their living room while they are being filmed from outside the window. Then we see a door open and the tiny beam of light from the camera shows a push mower before it's wheeled outside to the lawn. The camera follows the mower as it cuts the grass before, all too soon, there's a body in the way and it runs over it. There's a loud scream and Ellison is so disturbed he jumps away from the images. He leaves the room and looks like he's going to have a panic attack before simply returning to the projector and turning it off. Like, that one fucked me up. I was like, nope. We see Ellison sitting in front of his laptop and smoking a cigarette when he gets a FaceTime from Professor Jonas, which was kind of confusing because I couldn't tell what time of day it was. And they exchange pleasantries. Professor Jonas states that he is a really big fan and that when Ellison had sent him the photos, he knew exactly which cases he was working on. Jonas pointed out that the symbol wasn't some wide-known pagan symbol like a pentagram, but in fact the symbol of a specific pagan deity dating back to Babylonian times, Bagul, the eater of children.
Oh, great.
They talk about the crimes and how they all had missing children. Jonas goes into the lore of Bagul and tells Ellison that in the stories, Bagul needs the souls of children to survive and that he finds different ways to lure and trap children into his own netherworld. Then he consumes their souls over time. They speculate that it isn't actually Bagul doing these crimes, but rather cultists using them as a way of initiation, which would make more sense with the crimes being spread out through space and time. Ellison then packs up the projector and reels before closing and locking his office before going to bed. But at 3 in the morning, the actual witching hour, Ellison once again wakes up to the sound of the projector running. He makes his way to the office and looks around, not seeing anyone. He flips the projector off and grabs his handy bat before going around the house to lock the doors, which should have been done before he went to bed. I'm just saying.
Yeah, like, who doesn't lock their door before bed?
Mm-hmm. While making his way around in the dark fucking house, the ghosts of the missing children start popping out of the shadows around him, and he doesn't fucking see them.
What?
The little girl from Family Hanging Out appears right next to his face, standing on the kitchen counter, then runs off into the shadows as he makes his way to the living room, where the boy from Pool Party appears right behind him, standing while Ellison walks right by him. Ellison makes his way down the hall while the girl from Lawn Work is on the other end. She runs into the room next to her while he's turned around. When he walks back down the hallway, the boy from Sleepy Time is standing against the wall he was just looking at. The boy runs towards Ellison, then darts into a room right behind him. Ellison goes back into the office again, and the projector is running. He flips it off and goes to check on the kids. Trevor is in his room, and so is Ashley, but after Ellison leaves her room, the camera pans over her to see that she is not only awake, but is looking at something next to her bed. We see a painting of the Hung family and Mr. Boogie next to her bed, and next to it is the ghost of Stephanie with her finger in to her lips in the shh motion. Ellison, without turning on any lights, sits down on the sofa in the living room, bat laying across his lap, and falls asleep until morning. He goes back to the office, and judging by how quickly the door opens, it wasn't fucking locked. Later that day, Deputy is there, and the two are drinking coffee. Ellison asks Deputy if they were friends, and then he starts asking him if there had been any weird things that had happened in the house when the last family lived there. Deputy told him that nothing weird had happened until they were murdered. Ellison is then in the office typing away when Tracy starts yelling for him. He rushes to his wife and daughter. Ashley has broken their rule about only painting in her room and has painted a picture of her new friend Stephanie on a tire swing in their hallway. She explains that Stephanie didn't want the painting in her room because that used to be her brother's room. This is the point when Tracy learns that they are living in a murder house.
Great.
Tracy and Ellison go to their bedroom to argue, and she is really letting him have it. Ellison tried pointing out that it wasn't like they were sleeping in a room where people were murdered, that no one had to clean blood off their walls before they moved in. So Tracy asked him, "Wait, so you're saying it didn't happen here?" And she sounded so hopeful, and then Ellison responded with, "No, it happened in the backyard."
Oh my gosh.
Like that was any better.
Yeah.
It was a really great scene, and it felt real. Like, it felt like an argument. Later that night, Tracy is tucking Ashley into bed, and she asked, "Did I get Daddy in trouble?" And Tracy responded with, "No, your daddy got Daddy in trouble." Tracy then goes into the living room where Ellison is asleep in a chair with the TV on and a glass of whiskey in hand, and then they go to bed. While they're sleeping, we can see a small beam of light shining on Ellison as it got closer before suddenly turning off. Ellison then wakes up and there is this weird staticky noise playing before he walks in the dark to his office like he was in a trance. He goes into the room and the lights are on, but the projector is gone. He walks back down the hallway and the attic stairs are down. So, of course, he fucking goes up them, mistake number 6. When he pops his head into the attic, the projector is running and sitting in 2 neat rows are the ghost children. They turn towards him and all of them put their fingers to their lips in the shush motion. Then Mr. Boogie pops right out in front of Ellison's face, causing him to fall down the ladder.
Oh my god.
Then the next thing we know, the box, projector, and reels come flying down the hole in the ceiling, and Ellison gathers all of them up and takes them outside to burn them. Tracy then comes outside to ask him what the hell he is doing, and he tells her to get the kids and get in the car. They are leaving. They leave, and while they're driving, Ashley asks him where they were going, and Allison tells her that they are going home just like he promised. On the way out of town, the sheriff pulls him over for speeding, and after Ellison tells him that he is just following his advice and dropping the book, they make it back to their old house. The next day, the movers are returning their stuff, and Deputy keeps trying to call Ellison, but he ignores him. Later that night, Ellison gets an email from Jonas with some early pictures of Bagul that he is able to find. There are 3 of them, and in each, they depict 3 scares that prelude Bagul: a scorpion, a snake, and a dog.
Okay.
Jonas said that it was really difficult to find the pictures because people believe that Bagul was able to use depictions of himself as a gateway into our world, and that anyone who saw them was susceptible to him, especially children, so they were destroyed. Ellison then got upset and asked Jonas what would happen if the images were destroyed, like in a fire. If the gateway would be closed, Jonas didn't have an answer. Ellison then made it a point to delete all of his files on the murders and empty his laptop's trash. Ellison then goes up to the attic to drop off a box. Again, mistake number 7. And again, he finds a box labeled Home Movies, but this time there's something new. A package labeled Extended Cut Endings. He goes to his office and figures out which strips go to which movie and methodically puts them back together, all while drinking a cup of coffee. He then gets another call from Deputy, and this time he answered. Deputy is frantic and says that he had just made a connection that all the murdered families were connected. Each family was murdered after they had moved away from the previous house where a family had been murdered. All of them. All 5. Ellison said that he knew, but that didn't concern him anymore. But then Deputy pointed out that it did because he had just moved away from a previous murder house.
Yep.
Ellison then watched the extended movies, and now we see that it is actually the missing children that murdered their families.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Ellison then can't seem to stay awake and starts to panic before looking into his coffee cup where he sees a weird green liquid. After he falls to the floor, he hears Ashley say, "I like that you made the movies longer. They're better this way." Ellison then passes out, and the next thing we see is Ellison waking up bound while Ashley drags an axe across the floor. Behind her, you can see the tied up bodies of Tracy and Trevor. Ashley tells Ellison, "Don't worry, Daddy. I'll make you famous again," before starting the camera and lifting the axe. The next thing we see is Ashley walking down a bloody hallway before doing the shush motion. She then takes the camera and walks down the hallway to show her bloody paintings, including the symbol of Bagul, before she is joined by the other children. Then, with blood-soaked hands, she is drawing a doodle of her murdered family on the lid of the home movie box before Mr. Boogie picks her up and carries her away. The end.
Holy crap.
I just told you an entire movie in 40-ish minutes.
I don't think I can watch that movie. I think that will scare me too much.
Yeah, I watched it twice. And now I have to watch 12 hours of Disney. And then not only that, but like, Theo and Little Man are going out of town. So I'm going to be here by my fucking God, self.
You're going to be alone.
I'm going to get murdered.
But
luckily, like, Little Man's leaving. So, and it's the kids that murder. So
yeah, that's true. So, I mean, you're probably fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm not scared. I have a master sword. I'll stab a bitch. I don't care.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Just keep saying that to yourself.
I'm not scared. I am scared. That's a lie. But that is all I have for you guys. Surprise, I tried something new.
Well, I enjoyed it. Hopefully the audience will too. That was very something. That was a story.
That was
and
a story.
I liked your commentary on it.
Thank you.
I apologize for all of my scared noises in between.
No, I like it. Thank you. But, you know, if you guys have your own stories to tell or ideas for the hat, go ahead and hit us up at nightmaretown18@gmail.com. And also, if you didn't like this, you can tell me there. Or you can tell us over on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all at NightmareTown18. Or you can go on over to our Patreon and give us money and then give us ideas. And if you want to do that, that is Patreon/NightmareTownPodcast.
Boom. Yes, that's it.
But our next episode, it's my turn to pick. Our next episode is titled Fun and Games.
All right.
So yeah, hope you guys like this. If not, let me know. Because otherwise I'm just going to assume that you do, and I'm going to do it again. One day, maybe. We'll see.
I kind of hope you do, because really? I'm entertained. Okay. Maybe when it's not so COVID-y out, and after I have my second vaccine, maybe we can do a duo movie commentary thing. As like a bonus episode or something.
For the Patreon!
Yeah!
I would love that.
Well, Mystery Science Theater it.
Heck yeah. Like, live stream that shit.
Oh, that would be fun.
So you
have
get
a watch
just
party.
Me covering my face with a blanket.
Yeah, I mean, half of it's gonna be me just like looking at it through my fingers and like probably crying a little bit, but it'll be alright. It'll be entertaining.
How do we have a spooky podcast if we're both wimps?
I really don't know. I don't know how we manage.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to go. So,
until next time,
tell us a story. Bye.
Bye.